Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast. We have with us this week Donna Freitas, a returning guest, and I guess we can say now a friend of the podcast.
I hope so.
Now, Donna was here back in the spring to discuss her book, Sex and the Soul. And first, maybe we can talk about how that book is done. We're talking now in the summer of 08.
Things have been going really well. There's been a really wide reception to the book, from student affairs professionals to parents to, I guess, people on the left and the right. People have been very interested in the topic, and especially at universities and colleges. So I'll be visiting many locations this year, so for lectures.
Now, this, just to rehash for some of our listeners, this was a book that kind of looked at the so-called hookup culture on college and university campuses and why that flourishes, et cetera. But we're here to talk today about your second book of 2008. It's been a good year for you. And this book is called The Possibilities of Sainthood, which is actually a book for young adults. So a very different kind of writing for you. Now, what prompted this?
Well, it's my first novel. It'll be my first of three, actually. I never, ever thought I would write fiction. It was more or less an accident. I just, the idea for the character, her name is Antonia Lucia Labella, and she's an aspiring saint. She wants to be the first ever living saint in Catholic history. And this seemed to me a quirky, funny idea for a heroine of a novel, and I just started dabbling and writing, and she kept staying with me, but I never thought I would actually finish it, so it was a surprise when I did.
So is this the first of a series of books on this with this heroine?
There'll be at least two of with this heroine. So there's this one, and then there's another one coming out next year called The Patron Saint of Kissing.
Now, what age, what audience is this geared for? 13, 14-year-olds?
I think technically they're calling it 12 and up.
12 and up, okay.
But it's pretty rated G, so there's no swearing. There is a little kissing, but that's about it. So.
Well, maybe you can just give a brief kind of plot summary for folks who might be interested.
Sure. So Antonia is 15 years old, and she comes from a very intense, very big Italian Catholic family. They live in Rhode Island, and they own an Italian market, and she lives above the market, and she works there all the time. She's got a crazy mom and grandma and loud cousins and all sorts of folks roaming around all the time. But her big thing is, so she goes to Catholic school, too. But she's been writing the Pope once a month, every month, since she was seven, proposing new saints. So saints she feels like have been overlooked. For example, there's no patron saint of secrets. And she feels like this is just shocking. Like, how could you not have a patron saint of secrets? So she's been proposing new saints and then herself as the ideal candidate. So she's trying to convince the Pope he needs to let go of this whole you need to be dead thing with sainthood, because she thinks it would be much more fun to be a saint if she was alive. So it's sort of her version of becoming a princess, I guess you could say.
Now, how autobiographical is this? Now, did you want to become a saint?
No, I didn't want to become a saint. Well, there are some things that are obviously, I guess, inspired from my childhood. I grew up in Rhode Island, and I lived in a house filled with statues of saints and pictures of saints, and my mother and my grandmother live with us. They were always calling upon the saints, especially Saint Anthony, for various things that were lost in our house. So that part is, I guess, I never wanted to be a saint, but I always felt like the saints were everywhere. But a lot of this was inspired by the stories my mother told me when I was growing up, because she grew up above our family's Italian market in Bristol, Rhode Island. And there were two fig trees in the back. That's a big part of the story. Antonia has to take care of the fig trees. And if you've ever had fig trees in winter, you have to bury them. You have to cover them so they'll survive the winter. And so this is Antonia's job. And my mother used to talk all the time about the big fig trees in the yard behind the house. So, but I went to Catholic school my whole life, and I longed for my first kiss and all of that. And that's certainly, I guess that part of me is in Antonia too.
Now, there's an element of this book, I've read part of it, is that it's very rich with, you know, stories of the saints. Also, you know, as you said, you have a conclave in the book. There's some descriptions of what you have to do to become a saint. So this might not be familiar territory for, say, a 12-year-old public school who may be raised Catholic but is not familiar with all of this. So, I mean, was that intentional on your part to kind of educate as well as entertain?
Well, I guess I have two sides to my answer to that. And one is just, since I was writing about my family in many ways and my own childhood, or it's inspired by my own childhood growing up. I mean, Catholicism, my life was sort of rich with Catholicism. It was all over the place in my life. And so in many ways, it's just part of the setting of the story. And I think the saints are just sort of comedy in waiting. And one of the things that was fun about Antonia's character or writing it was, so she's always evaluating people based on their name. So she feels sort of sad for her friend Hillary because she feels like it's sort of bad to be named Hillary because Saint Hillary is the patron saint of snake bites, and she thinks that's kind of lame. But then she loves that her friend Maria is, she thinks Maria has a perfect name, that's her best friend, because because Saint Maria is the patron saint of youth, and she thinks Maria is beautiful. So in many ways, it's just part of her. It's part of her character. But one of the things I did think a lot about is, since I teach courses in women and spirituality at the colleges that I've taught at, both at St. Michael's College before and now at BU, one of the things that I found semester after semester is that students, especially women, come to my classes, and they've never ever heard of any women that have anything to do with Catholicism. And so I really made it a point to talk about some of the women that I teach in that class in the book. And Antonia's having a little bit of a dialogue with some of the more famous women mystics who are also saints. So some of it was intentional. But, I mean, Catholicism is just such a rich setting, and it also makes for such humor in many ways. I hope it's a very... One of the things that people have said is they feel like it's one of the first times they've read a book that has to do with Catholicism that isn't doom and gloom, that made them laugh. So that makes me happy when I hear that.
Now, did you read a lot of YA books, as they're called, to prepare for this?
Well, I read a lot of children's literature in general, and that's part of the work I do as a professor. I've always gone to conferences in children's literature and listened to scholarly lectures about it, and so I'm very familiar with the field of children's lit, and I use it when I teach my classes, actually. And one of the things I love about children's literature is that it's such a risky genre, and it's really perfect if you're teaching religion, because children growing up ask some of the biggest questions there are. You know, why are we here? You know, what am I supposed to do with my life? You know, why is there pain and suffering? And children's literature in general treats these topics. And so it was just a natural thing, I think, a teaching tool in many ways for me in teaching religion. So in that sense, it's always been part of my work. But it wasn't that I read a lot of books to prepare for it. It's just when I sat down to write a novel, this is what came out.
Now, to draw in your earlier book, Sex and the Soul, which deals with kind of a hookup culture on colleges and universities, obviously we're dealing with younger people here, but how is sex and romance and intimacy treated generally in these young adult books?
Well, it varies. Lately, in the last few years, there has been quite a few books that have come out in the YA genre that are extremely explicit, have very, very explicit sex scenes, and they've been pretty controversial in the press just because it's considered, you know, books for children or books for teens are considered quite, a sort of sacred genre, and people have been nervous about how the amount of sex has been shifting. But there are many books. I think one of the really fun things about teen novels is that often the romance is very sweet and it's very lighthearted. And so this one is extremely I guess it's extremely innocent. And I've joked now about how, in many ways, the possibilities of sainthood is the opposite of sex in the soul. And it, what's funny is I was actually writing it while I was doing the field work for this study. And I'm not, it wasn't conscious on my part, mm-hmm. but I mean, but this is a very, I mean, it's is rated G as rated G gets. But one of the things that was interesting was when I first finished it and I had some people reading it just for feedback, someone told me that I should make Antonia 12 instead of 15. And I said, why? And she said, well, because it's really unrealistic to have a 15-year-old protagonist who's never been kissed. And I said, no, it's not. I'm sure there are. I know there are plenty of people who've never been kissed at 15. And so I thought that was an interesting response, and it made me more determined to leave her as 15. So,
well, after looking at this book and being familiar with the earlier book, I saw it in a way as kind of an alternative narrative. You'd spoke in our earlier podcast about some of your students who would, you know, they were longing for a kind of a different way of going about romance, and as we talked about, even courting, but they didn't see that as possible. They just didn't have any models for it. So in some ways, you know, the kind of the way you treat this with a certain a light touch and innocence provides that. Am I mistaken in that reading?
Well, I think it's the students that I spoke to from my study are almost longing to go back to where Antonia is, I think, in this book. And I'm not sure if that's why I was, you know, imagining the story in the way I did, or the romantic part of the story the way I did when I was writing it. But one of the things that I think is so magical about, you know, being a teenager is, you know, is your first romance, the first time you fall for someone, and it's so exciting, but it also is so nerve-wracking. But it also makes for such wonderful humor. And even just imagining, you know, the dialogue that was going on in her head when she starts to realize, you know, who she likes and why she likes him. It's it was a really fun part of the story to write. But I've already had some feedback from some young readers, and they the thing that they keep focusing on is they said it was very romantic. So they didn't say it was very Catholic, but they have said it's very romantic. So that made me smile.
You said before that, you know, this is your first novel. And that this is obviously your first attempt at children's literature. Did you find it more difficult than you imagined? We were talking earlier about a piece in The New Yorker about E.B. White and writing Stuart Little, and he said it was much more difficult to try this genre. What was your sense going into it?
Well, it wasn't really, I guess writing this story wasn't so much a choice as it just poured out of me. And I didn't expect to write this story, but once I sat down to write it, I couldn't stop. And, you know, writing Sex and the Soul was the hardest thing I've ever done in terms of, it was a very grueling, it was in many ways a labor of love, but it was a very grueling project to work on. And the stories are very difficult stories that are told in the book. And so in many ways, it's a lot of sadness to Sex and the Soul. And it's also nonfiction, and it has a bazillion endnotes. And one of the things that was really liberating about writing this novel was it was fun for me. You know, the stuff about the saints is true. You know, that stuff is true. But whenever I hit something that, you know, I didn't quite like, or, you know, I could just make it up. And so it was so, you know, I'm an academic. You're never allowed to make anything up. So it was, to me, it was just, it was such a joy, and I've just had such a blast with it. And it's nice to write funny. So, and so far the reviews have all commented on how they think it's funny. So I'm glad I'm making people laugh.
Well, to that point of some humor and also some fabrication, we have the dedication page of your book where you say you dedicate, among others, to your grandmother, the patron saint of artichokes and people who say yes when mom and dad say no. So obviously you're having a little fun there, but you also mentioned in your dedication Monsignor Stephen Happel, am I pronouncing that correctly? Now, he was an advisor of yours.
He was my dissertation director at Catholic U. He was also the dean of the School of Religious Studies when he passed away unexpectedly a few years ago. But he had a really wonderful sense of humor, and he always thought I was going to sort of be a little bit different, I guess, as an academic in the projects that I chose. And so I think about him often, and I think he would have gotten a kick out of the fact that I wrote a novel about a girl who wants to be a saint.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. You know, you are you're teaching up at Boston University, and you have, you know, I'm sure all of the concerns that a normal young academic does, the need to publish, et cetera. Now, Sex and the Soul, as you said, heavily documented book, is definitely considered a work of scholarship. Do you worry at all that, you know, people in your field will say, you know, what are you up to writing books like this?
You know, I used to worry about things like that, and I guess I've just learned that whatever's going to come out of me is going to come out of me, and it's going to, if it's a novel for kids, then that's what it is. But I couldn't have written this novel without my PhD, to be honest. So much of what I teach is in this book, and it's made me really happy actually when my editor at Farrar, Straus & Giroux, that's where they're publishing it, talked about how she realized after, you know, she had read it several times, how much she had learned without even realizing it about Catholicism and the saints. And a lot of people have said that. And so I'm still the professor in this book, but I'm going to keep writing novels because I'm enjoying it. And if they want to keep publishing them, then great. So
you are you at work now on the sequels to this volume?
I am about to hand in book two, The Patron Saint of Kissing, and my editor might have my head if I don't do it soon. She's waiting for it. So, and I have another one finished, and then another one I'm about to start. I can't stop, I guess. So,
well, good luck with that. I should mention that this book, The Possibilities of Sainthood, has gotten already a star from Kirkus and
Publishers Weekly.
And School Library Journal. So that's good. Congratulations. And when is the actual pub date on this?
It's August 8th.
August 8th. So we're right on time here. Well, Donna Freitas, we want to thank you again for coming. And maybe when you have the next volumes out, you can come back in.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you again for joining us for this week's edition of the American Magazine podcast. We'd like to thank Bill McGarvey again, who provided the music for this week's show. You can learn more about him at billmcgarvey.com. Just a reminder, you can comment on our podcast at americamagazine.podbean.com. This is Tim Rudy for America Magazine.